Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Governor Cuomo joins us next. Stay with us.
At WNYC, we rely on listener support. But what exactly does that mean?
Hi, it's Shamita Basu. Your contribution helps make WNYC a stronger radio station. It's what lets us invest in new technology and adapt and evolve. You make us better in every way, and we couldn't get there without your support.
Show your support. Go to WNYC.org and click on donate.
WNYC is supported by Plaza Jewish Community Chapel, owned and operated by the Jewish community. Located at 91st Street in Amsterdam, offering a full range of funeral services, including arrangements in advance. More information at plazajewishcommunitychapel.org. German International School, New York, in White Plains, offering college prep bilingual education in German and English. Open house for pre-K and kindergarten January 25th. Private tour information and more at gisny.org. WNYC is a media partner of Brooklyn Public Library's Night of Philosophy and Ideas, a 12-hour exchange of ideas featuring philosophers and intellectuals from around the world. February 2nd, bklynlibrary.org/BPL presents.
On tomorrow's Brian Lehrer Show, it's Friday, so Mayor de Blasio will be here for our weekly Ask the Mayor segment. Get your questions ready. Plus, your calls of advice you wish someone had given you at pivotal ages. Tomorrow on The Brian Lehrer Show.
WNYC, independent journalism in the public interest. 93.9 FM and AM 820. NPR News and the New York Conversation.
WNYC, and here 2 days after the State of the State address, and as the Democratic majority, the new Democratic majority in the New York State Legislature is already passing some historic bills, Governor Cuomo joins us. Governor, thanks. Welcome back to WNYC.
Pleasure to be with you. Thank you, Brian.
Let me start here. With the federal government's partial shutdown about to hit the four-week mark, can you quantify the impact of the shutdown on New York State? Like, do you know how many unpaid federal workers there are in New York, or more unemployment claims being filed against state coffers, or any other impact on the economy?
Yeah, it's a good question. It works on a number of levels. First, the main impact would have been to our tourism industry, believe it or not. The Statue of Liberty and Ellis Island are very big tourist destinations, obviously. And we've been through these shutdowns before, unfortunately. So we anticipated that. The state has actually paid to keep the Statue of Liberty open and Ellis Island open, because the amount we pay for the staff to open it is less than we would lose if they were closed. It's hard to tell who's in and who's out. You know, the federal government has made a number of tranches here, who's essential, who's not essential. It's changed. We don't see a number in the unemployment claims yet. We do see an overall impact on the economy, which is partially the shutdown. Also, I believe it's what the federal government did to us in the tax reform policy, with special penalties for New York that added to our taxes in New York. It was called SALT, which eliminated the deductibility of state and local taxes. So we have our revenues are down about $3 billion, partially shut down, partially the federal tax consequences by penalizing New York.
What specific actions are you taking, or can the state take, to help federal workers as individuals if they aren't being paid?
Well, the basic program is unemployment, and that's where we are now. If it goes on much longer, we may need to do some other things, but hopefully it doesn't. Operationally, the state has stepped in and handled many of the functions. The critical function we're watching is at the airports, the TSA employees who are essential employees, but there's a significant number who are calling in sick. If that slows down the security checkpoints at the airports, that would be an issue for us. It hasn't happened yet, but we're watching that.
In the state of the state, you used the term Green New Deal, made popular recently by Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez and others, though it's been around a while. Their Green New Deal is not just about decarbonizing the economy, which you called for, that's the green part, by 2040, you hope, in New York State. It's also about the New Deal part, which in the model of FDR's New Deal, as you know, invests many government dollars in green infrastructure jobs, also provides a government jobs guarantee to people who can't find other work. So what did you mean by a Green New Deal for New York, both the green part and the New Deal part?
Yeah. Well, I mean what we've been doing. This is not new for us in New York. We've been pursuing it for a number of years. Green New Deal to us means, number one, the most aggressive standards when it comes to climate change. I believe this nation is in denial. I believe the federal government is in denial. And we have the most aggressive green program in the country, literally. Highest goals. By 2040, we want to have an entirely clean power grid, a climate action council to move to a zero carbon footprint, and create the industries here, which we know are going to be the industries of the future, because if the planet is to have a future, we must have industries that are better at green technology, at renewables, at battery storage, at wind turbines, at solar panels. We have a manufacturer in Buffalo, a combination between Panasonic and Tesla, which is one of the largest manufacturers of solar panels in the hemisphere and some of the most advanced. We're working very hard to attract now the wind turbine industry to New York. I cannot, as a state, guarantee full employment. That could be done on a national level. But no state is ahead of New York. People have said, accused me of being too aggressive. I don't see it that way. I think if we don't get our hands around this problem quickly, there will be no future. You know, this is the patient who goes into the doctor, and the doctor says, look, if you don't stop smoking and drinking and lose 25 pounds, you'll be dead of a heart attack in the next year. And then you have an aggressive reaction. It's not really aggressive. It's rational, because you'll be dead. And I believe we are destroying the planet.
Is there any green infrastructure jobs program that would incur a new New York State expense or anything approaching a ban on fossil fuel use in any sector of the economy or the energy production, rather than just trying to attract the wind industry, et cetera, things like that?
Well, the attraction doesn't come by magnetic force. The attraction comes by economic incentives. So we have put $1.5 billion to an initiative to attract and build wind turbines here. $2.5 billion, Brian, for new clean water infrastructure. We just announced an initiative, a consumer right to know bill. There are 1,000 carcinogens that are in products that we use every day, and consumers don't even know it when they take the product off the shelf in the store. And our consumer right to know law says the manufacturer must put labeling on those products. So we're doing it on all levels. I don't believe this is any there's any one silver bullet. We're going to have to change the way we live, we eat, we dispose, we reuse. We have a plastic bag ban, which is controversial, but I believe it's the right move. That's part of it. So it's a very comprehensive approach and very aggressive.
One more thing related to this. The Green New Deal movement is also defining as off limits any campaign donations from fossil fuels companies or lobbyists. And this is, of course, part of a larger movement to stigmatize corporate donations in general. And I see you're calling for some campaign finance reform, which includes a ban on all corporate donations and lowering the maximum contributions that individuals can make to candidates in New York. But my understanding is there would still be super PACs and the maximum donation would still be among the highest in the country. So there'd still be a lot of ways for wealthy and powerful people to spend money to influence elected politicians and government officials, no?
True, but you can't point the finger at a state. First, we have a 100% corporate ban for candidate contributions. So fossil fuel industry corporation or any other corporation would be banned. Second, in many ways, the problem is worse than you state. New York City has public financing. I'm calling for public financing, contribution limits. Yes, but then the federal government decided a case called Citizens United that says anyone can spend anything they want in what's called an independent expenditure committee. And that trumps the entire system. So in New York City elections, we have all these public finance limits and boards, et cetera. And then you have an independent expenditure committee called New Yorkers for a Better New York. You know, they always have a great name. And that has $20 million or big corporations or big individuals set up an independent expenditure committee.
You had a group called the Committee to Save New York, which was, you know, big business based and giving you a lot of money.
Yeah, that was multiple years ago. And that was not an independent expenditure. That was a lobbying committee. The independent expenditure committees are just political committees that can spend whatever they want with very little disclosure, anonymity. And that loophole swallows all the other laws. You can have a mayoral contest in New York City, and everybody says we're following the public finance law, but then a few big groups, Democrat and Republican, by the way, you know, it's very easy to point to the Koch brothers, but we have very big Democratic interests that write a check for $5 million, and that just overwhelms all these little precautions we put in place.
On marijuana legalization, I read that your fiscal 2020 budget does not project any tax revenue from sales. Does that mean you don't think it'll start before April 2021, that next fiscal year?
We're not counting the revenues to be cautious. We estimate $300 million when the system is up. But the question is, when is the system up and what is the system? Now, this has been done right, and it's been done wrong. You look at the other states that have done it. Some have had better experiences than others. So we want to make sure we have a system that protects the consumer, that protects young people, no one under 21 years old. And also, Brian, this is an opportunity not just to set up a new industry where the big corporations come in, the big current medical marijuana companies come in with a lot of money and franchise the state. I want to find a way to economically empower the communities that have been burdened and hurt by this, communities of color, the poorer communities in our state. And how do we get the industry into those people's hands and those communities? And that's easier said than done. So we want to do it right. We don't want to rush it. And we want to be economically prudent, and that's why we're not counting the revenues until later on.
Some progressives are unhappy that your version would allow cities or whole counties to opt out. Like freshman state senator Julia Salazar from Brooklyn tweeted that opt out is unacceptable, her word, because it would leave out some communities that have been harmed by criminalization. What's your response to that?
We say larger cities can opt out of the system. This is a controversial area. So Some people think it's a no-brainer, so to speak. Some communities have real concerns. And my opinion is democracy still exists, especially on an issue like this, where people have valid differences of opinion. You know, it's a very mixed public issue right now, Brian. So a larger city could opt out, but they would affirmatively have to vote to opt out. The main question was, would they need to opt in or opt out? Our law says, our proposal says, everybody's in unless you affirmatively take a vote and opt out. New York City is going to opt in.
New topic, and my guest, if you're just joining us, and you probably recognize the voice, is Governor Cuomo. For another few minutes here on WNYC, we had Senate Majority Leader Andrea Stewart-Cousins on the show yesterday, and she wouldn't commit to congestion pricing, I guess realizing that her own Westchester district and other lawmakers from the outer boroughs and the inner suburbs feel it targets their constituents. How can you get even a Democratic legislature to yes on congestion pricing, which I know is one of your priorities?
It's a good question. Look, I'm very excited about this session in general. I had a Republican Senate for many years, which just refused on philosophical, ideological grounds to pass certain things. Also, many of the items I did pass, you had to compromise to get them passed with the Republican Senate. So with a Democratic Senate now, you will see many of the things that we could not pass, which Democrats agreed on, passing. And it's exciting. Reproductive Health Act, Contraceptive Care Act, Marijuana, Child Victims Act, the DREAM Act. These things will now pass. That is not to say there are still not controversial items. The congestion pricing, which is a funding stream for the MTA, which we desperately need, which would basically toll the Manhattan Central Business District, that is still controversial. People have mixed opinions. The mayor of the city of New York has a mixed opinion. And people from the suburbs where people drive in have a mixed opinion because they don't want people, their constituents, to pay a toll. So that will be controversial. Ethics reform is always been controversial. So we will still have controversial issues. The issues that the Democrats had supported for years have now been unblocked, and that's great. But that's not to say we still don't have issues to deal with.
So congestion pricing, you can make a promise, but the MTA so desperately needs a funding stream.
Well, yes. But see, yes. So my argument is, and my argument was to the legislature, I know these are tough choices. I know congestion pricing is not popular, but it's the right thing to do. I just ran a campaign, as you know, and I said at the beginning of the campaign, I support congestion pricing, even though it's not politically popular. And it, quote unquote, hurt me during the campaign. But, Brian, we have neglected the MTA since the 60s. There's no magic or mystery as to why the MTA is in the situation it's in. It's two things. Number one, nobody's in charge. Everybody blames everyone. That situation was set up purposefully in the 60s because no politician wanted responsibility for the MTA. No politician wanted responsibility for raising fares or tolls. No politician wanted responsibility for late trains. So the governor has some control. The mayor has control. The Senate leader has control.
But, of course, a lot of other people say ultimately the governor does have all the control. Have you ever proposed something for the MTA that the board then blocked?
Sure. By the way, many people are wrong. You know, we live in a world of tweets where facts don't even matter.
What's an example of that, though?
I'll tell you exactly. This is how the MTA works. There's a board of 17. I have six. Six is not a majority of 17. The mayor has four. On top of that, the mayor can unilaterally veto the capital decisions made by the board. So even if you get through the board, the mayor unilaterally can say no. The assembly speaker can unilaterally say no. The Senate leader can unilaterally say no. The governor can unilaterally say no. It is an absurd situation. And by the way, the unilateral veto of the mayor, the speaker, and the Senate leader can't even be overridden. It was not a dumb system. It was a diabolical system. And I've dealt with bureaucracies long enough. Someone has to sign on the dotted line. New York City Board of Education, all those years. Who's the Board of Education? Who knows? Mayoral control. So now we know the mayor is in charge. He signed on the dotted line. I support mayoral control.
But when were you blocked?
We need the same thing for the MTA.
But when were you blocked on a specific?
It doesn't even get to that. It's every capital plan, which is the main budgetary policy direction for the board, to get 17 votes and not be vetoed by all those people. Mm. They come up with this political hodgepodge document that gives some money to Nassau and some money to Suffolk and some money to Westchester. And when the Senate leader was John Flanagan from Suffolk County and he could veto, then you had to make sure he wasn't going to veto, and the Speaker Carl Heastie's not going to veto, and the mayor's not going to veto.
So it was baked in.
Always.
On Amazon.
I'm sorry, one other second. You need to fix the management, and then you need the funding stream. You have 50-year-old subway cars. Don't be surprised when they break down. You need funding, and that's congestion pricing. Everything else is baloney, as I like to say. There is no other alternative. How about a millionaire's tax? How about we ask the federal government? How about we ask God to send out a lot of money? Nice ideas, but they're not realistic.
A millionaire's tax, the mayor would say, and I don't want to get bogged down on this because you've both gone over, round and round on it, but the mayor would say that a millionaire's tax is also a dedicated funding stream, could be like congestion pricing, and it's less regressive.
Yes. And the legislature and a lot of financial analysts will say, we have a millionaire's tax. It's a great political talking point, but we have a millionaire's tax. It's the second highest in the United States of America. And we just experienced a federal tax reform act that increased our taxes 30%. Unless you want to be sitting in this state where it's just me and you and four listeners, you have to understand the economic consequences of this thing. And even the legislature has said they think a millionaire's tax would actually be a negative. So politically, it's not feasible. And although congestion pricing is difficult, it is has more of a political chance than anything else. And I'm going to fight very hard to get congestion pricing because it is the best, if not only, viable option. And you're right, a legislative body, they could do nothing. The old expression was, a legislator who does nothing wrong. Don't take a difficult vote. Yes, but in that case, we're going to see more delays and more deterioration of the MTA.
We're almost out of time. I want to get in an Amazon question and a politics question. On Amazon, I've had multiple guests now who oppose the deal, saying the state's public authorities control board could still cancel it. And I see state law gives the board the power of, quote, approval of the financing and construction of any project proposed by state public benefit corporations, unquote. Do you agree or disagree that the board, which hasn't met yet since the deal, can cancel or alter aspects of it?
Yeah, I disagree. And this is another policy by tweet. There are very few companies that come to New York or stay in New York that has the highest taxes in the United States of America without an incentive program. I loved all the editorials that condemned the incentive to Amazon, which, by the way, I understand the political reality. They're so rich. Why did they need more money? They ran a national competition. Everybody was competing. Everybody knew everybody was competing. The big question was who was going to win the competition because it was such a big score. You know, we don't get 25,000 jobs anymore. It doesn't work that way. We work to get 200 jobs, 300 jobs. But we incentivize the New York Times, the New York Post, almost every major corporation that has moved in has been given an incentive to come or stay and grow.
Right.
So this is the future. These are good jobs. We've been trying to bring big tech companies to develop that tech sector and diversify our economy.
Right.
We make hundreds of millions of dollars in tax revenue.
But one quick follow-up, if I can. It's in the news today that in Seattle, Microsoft is pledging $500 million to help build affordable housing because of the widespread experience or perception, at least, that it and Amazon's huge footprints have pushed up housing prices and shortages to the point where it's exacerbating homelessness. So how much is that a sign that Amazon will bring hardship to New York City, not just 25,000 jobs? And are you asking anything on behalf of New York, anything like Microsoft just promised Seattle?
We will get billions in revenues from the jobs. You cannot have an equation that is sustainable that says, well, we will shrink as a society because otherwise it would increase the housing problem. You're going to get billions of dollars from Amazon. If you determine there need to be affordable housing, take those billions and build affordable housing.
All right. And last thing, Senator Gillibrand entered the presidential race this week, but you just recently said Joe Biden has the best case to be the nominee because of his credibility. So you're for Biden over Senator Gillibrand, who represents New York State?
Well, I said what I said about Joe Biden before Senator Gillibrand had said anything. I'm a big fan of Senator Gillibrand. I worked with her at the Department of Housing and Urban Development. We're personal friends for more years than I care to remember. I also know Joe Biden, and what I said about him, I believe. And there'll be many other people getting into the race, so it's way too early to start to talk about who's in, who's out, or preferences.
So should I take this as dialing back best case?
No.
That he has the best case?
No, no. What I said about Joe Biden stands. I like Senator Gillibrand very much, and she's a friend. But what I said about Senator Biden stands. I mean, they're not mutually inconsistent.
So you are or you are not endorsing Biden for the Democratic nomination?
I haven't endorsed anyone. What I said about Joe Biden was not an endorsement. It was a statement of fact. Let's see who gets into the race. There's a lot of time. I do believe the problem for the Democrats and the reason Mr. Trump is president of the United States is not because he won, but because we lost. We will not win unless we've established credibility. And credibility does not come from just the pronouncement of progressive goals. It comes when people believe you can accomplish those goals.
But does that definition of credibility put you in a camp in the party that says wooing back white working class voters is a more likely path to victory than maximizing women and people of color and first-time voters, which seems to be how the House Democrats did so well in the midterms?
Well, you know that's not the case. I just had an election, so we don't have to guess. I won a Democratic primary with more votes than any governor in the history of the state of New York. I won the general election with more votes than any governor in the history of the state of New York. I believe the size of my victory proved my point, which is I am a progressive. This is the most progressive state in the nation, and not because we have progressive rhetoric, but because we have a progressive reality. We passed the highest minimum wage, $15. We passed free college tuition. We passed marriage equality. We actually do it. We got it done. Our government works. We function. I'm not asking anyone to take us as a matter of faith, which they won't, because they've heard all the Democratic rhetoric for 30 years, and they're in the same situation. They want proof. Trump won because they didn't believe the Democrats' rhetoric anymore.
Governor, thanks as always. Talk to you next time.
Thank you.